The Marine Corps Warfighting Laboratory, or MCWIL, is tasked by the Commandant to identify future challenges and opportunities, develop warfighting concepts, and comprehensively explore options available to the warfighters in order to inform the combat development process to meet the challenges of the future operating environment. In more simplistic terms, the lab is tasked with the experimentation and wargaming required to inform the needs and capabilities of the future battlefield. As I've mentioned before on previous episodes, Marine Corps acquisition is a team sport, and MCWIL plays a huge role on that team. Established in 1995, MCWIL is comprised of four divisions, including concepts and plans, wargaming, science and technology, and experimentation. Today, I have the opportunity to speak with the Chief of Staff for MCWIL and Deputy Director of Futures Division, Mr. Scott Lacey. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show here with us. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up being in this seat?
Sure. Good morning, Manny, and thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. So, background, a Marine, like many of us in the room, right? That career in the Marine Corps, artillery officer by trade.
That doesn't mean I'm going to have to yell a little louder.
No, it means I can barely hear you.
Oh, okay. We're good then.
So it was a lot of fun, great career with some really interesting assignments. Spent a couple of years as the artillery off-field sponsor and ground fires advocate inside plans, policies, and operations at Headquarters Marine Corps.
Okay.
The opportunity to be battalion commander for a couple of years, and then back to the Pentagon for a couple consecutive tours. Special assistant to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, working on the chairman's action group, which was really educational, just incredible experience. And then thought I was leaving the Pentagon, and turned out I was actually just moving to a different floor, where I spent 3 years building the Marine Corps POM.
You got stuck in that HOV lane and you couldn't get out, huh?
I did, right? So, you know, after six consecutive years in the Beltway, five consecutive years in the Pentagon, right? Turned out one, the kids had never lived anywhere as long as they had lived at that point. So was ready to do something different, retired in 17 and went to industry for a few years, which was another really, really incredible experience. I went to one of the big four consulting firms, an organization a little bit bigger than the Marine Corps, and almost as old. And so it was fascinating to learn an entirely different culture that was built for a different purpose, but entirely different from the Marine Corps. So it was a real opportunity to see things differently. And after a few years of that, the position at the lab opened up, and then Brigadier General Watson, now Major General Watson, asked me if I was interested in coming back. And I really was, because what I had missed was the mission. What I had really missed was, you know, there's a lot of interesting things to do in the world, but I found that none that I experienced meant as much to me as the Marine Corps mission.
When you grow up in this, the calling keeps bringing you back.
It really does. It does. Or we're completely institutionalized, right?
Yeah. Maybe we missed something.
But it was an opportunity to do something really exciting coming to the warfighting lab, and so that's what brought me back.
That's awesome. I mean, I think you've got quite the fantastic experience going there for you, and I think it's an experience that probably serves the lab extremely well. So when I think of MCWIL, I think of experimentation. You guys are out there playing with things, seeing what works, what doesn't work. But I'm sure it's a little bit more than that. Can you give us a quick overview of the lab and the things you all do there?
Absolutely. It's exciting. I'm actually going to read you the mission statement, because I think that's a good place to start as it currently exists in the table of organization. The Marine Corps Warfighting Lab generates and examines threat-informed operating concepts and capabilities and provides analytically supported recommendations to inform subsequent force design and development activities. And the reason I wanted to get that precisely right is because that governs exactly what we do. And that means we start by thinking about the threat. As of the National Defense Strategy of 2018, we have a clearly articulated pacing threat.
Right.
Right? And so that has been consistent over two administrations and two national defense strategies. And so we have retained that pacing threat. So that's not the only threat we look at. We look across the threats in the operating environment, in the projected operating environment. But we start by being threat informed. And then that shapes the capabilities that we seek to develop. And when you describe the four divisions of the lab, as you did just a minute ago in the intro, it sounds like it can make a very methodical process or a very clean process, mm-hmm. right? We start mm-hmm. with a concept or a plan.
Yeah, yep.
We take that and we war game it. Does it make sense? Does it, you know, do we find flaws in it? Does it, do we answer hypotheses about that concept? Do we then take it from war gaming and identify what science and technology needs to look at, what that division needs to be seeking in order to be able to execute that concept as we've war gamed it? And then as we get it further fleshed out, if you will, then it becomes a live force experimentation effort. And that sounds like a very clean cycle, when in reality, it's more like a flaming pinwheel. Right? Because there are good ideas.
There's no telling what comes out on the other end.
That's right. Yeah, and there's no telling where the things that you learn get injected into that mm-hmm. process. Right? Because we can start with a concept and discover, hey, that would be great, but the technology isn't there. Right? Or we can have a new piece of technology that comes out and says, whoa, that's a game changer. We need to reevaluate our concepts.
Right.
And then, you know, in wargaming, maybe through wargaming, we determine it's not the best way to go, or that there are significant changes and we need to start the cycle over.
And it's got to be fascinating. I mean, as someone who served for many years, technology is moving at a much faster pace right now. So it's got to be fascinating to see that you go down the road with something and then all of a sudden you stop to infuse something that just developed and may change the outcomes of everything you've been planning.
Absolutely. And what I'm sure you've heard from other folks, but is the reality today, is a lot of that technology doesn't come out of Department of Defense.
Right.
Right. So where kind of as we grew up, things originated in the Department mm-hmm. of Defense and matriculated slowly through the process and evolved over time. Well, now the technological advances are so rapid and they appear from places completely unrelated to mm-hmm. Department of Defense. And oh, by the way, the threat's doing the same thing with an eye on what we're doing.
Right.
Right. So it has dramatically shortened the cycle time that we need in order to bring new capabilities to the fleet, if that makes sense.
It does. I mean, it's fascinating just to think about the concepts that are born and evolved in somebody's garage, for the lack of a better term, and to take that capability and fuse it into, you know, into the things that we're doing today. So you gave us a quick overview of what everything, how everything comes together, but let's talk about the four specific divisions. Can you touch a little bit on what each one is responsible for?
Sure.
And how it all comes together. Obviously, we address that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll start with concepts and plans. So this division has two branches, right? One that works the concepts that we've talked about in the past, most recently stand-in forces, right? So concepts section within the division is responsible for writing those concepts. Plans works with the joint staff and OSD to work through the plans process that help form decision support materials for senior leaders in Department of Defense, right? They've got analytic processes that help them decide what resource decisions to make and whatnot else. And it's through that, it's plans branch that works through OSD and the joint mm-hmm. staff, as well as works with the Navy and the other services. So that's CAP, that's concepts and plans. Wargaming division is exactly as it sounds. The division is responsible for conducting the institutional war games. And these are capability development war games. They're not educational war games, not some of the other reasons you might do war games, OPLAN validation, things like that. This is very specifically capability development wargaming.
You mentioned wargaming. I apologize for interrupting, but you mentioned wargaming. Can we touch a little bit about the new wargaming center?
Sure.
I see that massive building being built right outside of Q-Town there. So can you touch a little bit about what role that's going to play within this division? Because I'm assuming you all are going to eventually take responsibility for most, if not all of it.
That's right. I mean, so as Systems Command builds the Wargaming mm-hmm. Center and the program manager for the wargaming capability mm-hmm. works it to IOC and FOC, initial operating capability and full operating capability, that's when the lab in the form of Wargaming Division will start assuming responsibility for the conduct of the war games in that facility. And that will be a kind of a watershed moment for the Marine Corps in terms of being able to conduct war games at multiple levels of classification mm-hmm. In large numbers simultaneously across multiple locations, right? So there's a whole host of things that go into that wargaming center in addition to just looking like a really cool big building driving to Newtown, you know, kind of towering in the distance a little bit. But it's really going to be something new for the Marine Corps and a capability that we have not had before.
Yeah, we had the PM for Wargaming Center here. And I mean, the fascinating aspect of this, that it's a national capital region asset at the end of the day that's going to be able to provide some great education to the senior leadership, depending on what they're looking for. So just wanted to throw that out there. Yeah. But please, I know we covered down on two divisions. What can you round us out with the next two?
So Science and Technology Division, they're really the technological headlights of the lab, in the sense that they are horizon scanning. Their mission is to be out there identifying things that could be of use to the Marine Corps and kind of helping shepherd them to the appropriate technology readiness level where we can start experimenting, prototyping, experimenting, getting the capability out to the fleet for further refinement.
Would it be fair to say that that's the division that's probably got the closest tie with Marine Corps Systems Command?
I do. I think that through the acquisitions process,
I'm jumping ahead of myself.
You're absolutely right. Science and Technology, as they shepherd something to the right TRL, the right technology readiness level, it's really important to be closely aligned with both Systems Command and Capability Development Directorate within Combat Development Integration. Whole bunch of acronyms there, but the bottom line, the requirements writers at CDD, because unless we are able to smoothly move a capability from science and technology assessment through a series of requirements and then over to the acquisition authority, right? If we don't do that well, if we don't closely work with the Systems Command team and the CDD team, then it makes the process, which is already complicated enough, really difficult and lengthy to get the capabilities into the fleet.
And or it could just become a science project that was...
Or it doesn't get there at all.
Right.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So these things have to be in alignment. And, you know, I think many folks would say what we're doing now takes way too long. I think that's probably a pretty common refrain. And that's under the best of times. And that's without even bringing into it the pressure of a peer competitor.
Right.
Who is actively not only going to be monitoring what we're doing, but taking counteractions. So, you know, one of the things the Commandant talks about is being worried about being outcycled, right, because of our process. So we're not only in a race against our own process to get something to the fleet because they need it, we're in a subsequent race against any counteractions against that capability we bring to the fleet. And so that's why it's really important that we work closely together.
And to bring a little fairness to the process, I mean, we have rigor into the process built in for a variety of reasons. Safety, ensuring we can get there, being good stewards of taxpayers' dollars and not running down the road and say, well, there goes X millions of dollars. We didn't do enough research. So our peer competitor doesn't have that problem in mind.
No, that's absolutely right. And they, you know, we have law and policy for a reason, right? All of those things. I think part of what's incumbent on us as we work through these capabilities, as we develop these capabilities, is identifying where there is policy that is too restrictive and allow our senior leaders to take a swing at working on that policy, or where there's something in law and we need to take it to the lawmakers and see if there is refinement that we can instantiate or they can instantiate at our request. Right. In order to expedite the process. But I think there is a common assessment of we need to do better. What there is not a common answer to is exactly how.
We'll just have to walk down that road together. And last but not least, can you touch on experimentation?
Absolutely. So live force experimentation is what they do. Probably where folks might have seen them most recently is the infantry battalion experimentation the lab has been conducting with the fleet. The divisions in the fleet, one battalion per division, to get a sense of what the right size and shape and capabilities for a future infantry battalion ought to be.
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of discussions about, you know, what the size of the squad will look like and whatnot. So tell me a little bit, if you will, because obviously you got a lot of smart people, you do a lot of things in the lab. How much time do you spend engaging with the operational forces? How much time do you spend engaging with the FMF and getting their feedback or buy-in, whichever is appropriate?
So I would say we spend a lot of time doing that. Everything we do is by, with, and through the fleet in terms of our experimentation. And I would also say it's never enough.
Right.
Right, because the frequently, the best feedback that we get is from those junior Marines in the field with their hands on a prototype, actually able to figure out how to get the most out of it in ways that we didn't think of, right? Because the best ideas don't come from back here. The best ideas come from Marines using the gear in the field and really figuring out how to make it perform. So all of our life force experimentation is done by, with, and through the Fleet Marine Force. We participate in a number of experiments, exercises with the fleet, and not just the Marine Corps, but also with the other services, with the Navy, especially in the sense of finding our ways to contribute to the maritime fight, to a naval force. That means a lot of time making sure that we are synced up with those naval forces, right, with the numbered fleets, to make sure that the MEFs and the numbered fleets have the capabilities that we can provide for their mission.
Yeah, I know we've done things here in years past. We had this thing called Home on Home, where we, you know, brought together the Army and the other services, and we share ideas, share knowledge about mutual interests, such as autonomous vehicles, for instance, for lack of a better term. So that's something you all look to do. I know you all participated in some of this.
Probably the best example right now from an experimentation standpoint is Project Convergence.
Okay.
So the Army runs Project Convergence as one of their premier experimentation venues, and we very actively participate in that. It's an opportunity for us to do things that we might not get the chance to do elsewhere, and it becomes another great venue for introducing new prototypes and working the bugs out of them in experimentation.
Yeah, I know they're going to be doing some exercising later this year out of Camp Pendleton, and you all will hopefully be participating, a joint partner in that. So I'm trying to wrap my head around some of the things you said. So let me ask you a tough question. What's a typical day look like for you? What's a typical week look like for Scott Lacey? I mean, four divisions doing completely unique and different things, all bringing together. So what hat do you put on when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And sometimes I don't know. And sometimes it's not the right hat. My role is essentially twofold. Right? We'll call it 50% is the deputy to the commanding general of the lab. Okay. Right now, Brigadier General Ellison. So I, as his deputy, there's kind of an up and out focus, being stunt double for him when he can't be someplace. But the command really needs to show interest and be involved. And that can be anything from congressional engagements to other service engagements, things of that nature. And so the other 50% of the time is chief of staff, which is really focused internally on the organization and the synchronization of the divisions and the day-to-day activities, all the administrative and logistics activities that go into the command.
So you touched a little bit about our partnerships, your partnership working with CDD, working with the Hill. Obviously, you work with us a lot. Can you maybe touch a little bit about some of the things that the lab is working with CISCOM and the importance of these partnerships that you just mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. So we work very closely in a number of areas across the classification spectrum, but many of the things that we're working on now, probably the biggest we've already described in terms of dollar value at the moment, is that War Gaming Center. Right, as the prospective operator, you know, once it hits IOC and FOC, we work extremely closely with the program manager and his shop. So that's one area where we are engaged on a daily basis, working really closely together, because this is all new for both teams as we do this, right? First of its kind for the Marine Corps. And so it takes our over communication, let alone communication. Yeah. We need to over communicate as we all learn things in the process, and bring all the other stakeholders involved in the construction and the kitting out, and let alone the ultimate wargaming capability that is in there.
And bringing the people along to eventually
absolutely
grow that capability. Because it's one thing to build a building, put all the fancy gear in it. Who's going to run it?
That's right.
Who's going to manage it?
That's right. And so that's a part of this as well, is the hiring process for bringing new folks on to the lab who will be crucial to the operations of the Wargaming Center once it's completed, as well as a host of other areas where we've got an experiment and we want to make sure that your folks are out there actively involved and seeing what is coming down the pipe. Because to your point earlier, it doesn't do any good if we come up with a great idea and hand it off to no one who's ready to receive it. There's no requirement.
Right.
There is no acquisitions pipeline ahead. That doesn't do anybody any good. It really becomes wasted time and effort, or we don't get a critical capability out to where it needs to be in time.
So I haven't had anybody from requirements on the podcast yet, mm-hmm. but you hit on a critical node there, because you know a lot of folks see, oh, hey, look, great piece of gear, great, you know, and we go back to there's no requirement.
Right.
And if there's no requirement, we can't move forward with some of this. So it's fascinating that you all really are at the cutting edge and looking at all these things. And it's got to be great to see all this capability. But it's also got to be challenging when you can't infuse that neat capability into something you want to do.
Well, and it's the onus is on us as the headlights to be able to communicate the value of something.
It's a great analogy. I like that. The headlights.
Right? It's up to us to be able to articulate why we think this fits a need for the Marine Corps, and to have the analysis that shows it not only compelling to the requirements writers, mm-hmm. right, but analytically supported, so that as those requirements are developed and the acquisition process works, that we're able to go back to Congress and show the analysis that underpins the work that's gone on. But the onus is on us. The onus is on us to bring your folks in early, to bring the requirements writers in early, so that nobody is surprised as these things matriculate through our technology readiness level kind of expeditions, if you will. We have that responsibility to make sure nobody is surprised that these things are coming.
I'm so glad you said that, because oftentimes it's one of the things that we try to educate folks on is the fact that we are sitting at the table together, and McWill is doing some stuff and CISCOM is doing some other stuff, but we're all sitting at the table. Absolutely. We're not trampling on each other. We're trying to find the best path forward to get to where we need to be. Partnerships are crucial to everything we do, and you talked a little bit about some of them. But I know you've developed some partnerships with industry over the years, and you're focused on some of what they do. Can you talk to us a little bit about that partnership, and maybe about where you'd like that partnership to go?
Certainly. So without industry, none of this works,
right?
Bottom line, especially to kind of the earlier point, that the best ideas, the really good ideas, are not appearing inside DOD,
right,
you know, at
right.
the onset. I mean, they are appearing elsewhere. And so for us as the headlights, we are always seeking good ideas from industry. Mm-hmm. We're always seeking to hear what they believe could be of value to us, and also be able to see enough that we can identify where there's a value if maybe it's not obvious to industry, mm-hmm. right? So we are always looking for communication with industry, and they can approach us through a standing broad area agreement, a white paper. There is a process for the smallest or biggest industry players to reach to us with their ideas.
That's actually a great point. Can you touch on that a little bit? I mean, is it through your website? Is it?
It absolutely is.
Please, I'm not going to get ahead of myself. So,
I appreciate that. It is. If you go to the Marine Corps Warfighting Laboratory website, you will find a process in there for reaching out to us with an email address, what the BAA is, and how to reach to us with a white paper, and what our responsibility is for giving you feedback, giving industry feedback on that white paper, and then working from there.
So we're knee deep into Force Design 2030. We've accomplished a lot of things. There's still a few more years to go. If you had to put out a call to industry and say, hey, folks, pay attention to this, or can you bring us this to help us solve this problem? Is there something that comes to mind that you would?
So where I would point everybody to is the Force Design Annual Memo, right? So, and the reason being is that that captures exactly what the Commandant's guidance is for the direction of the lab in many cases, the direction of the technology, and kind of the crucial problems that we're trying to solve. And that is an unclassified document that industry can look at and say, mm-hmm. I have something that might be able to get at that problem or that problem. Because it lays out a number of things that, in addition to a number of tasks for our organization. It lays out the things that we're going to be experimenting with in the near term, and some of the problems that we need to get after.
You've touched on everything we do. Ultimately, we do for that Marine, the young lieutenant, the young Lance Corporal out there in the field. because without them, I mean, they're our customer. And they're a very demanding customer, rightfully so. And you talked a little bit about the relationship with Marines. But I know there are Marines out there saying, oh, I got a great idea. Is there a path or a way for them to maybe reach out to the lab and or get involved in some of the experimentation and things that go on?
So there is. We have an experimentation fellowship for NCOs and staff NCOs that we go out several times a year and seek their input and bring them aboard the lab for a TAD period to be fellows. Okay. We've done PCA orders in the past. We've done a number of different things, but the purpose is to get that input directly from the fleet for folks who have either worked on live experimentation or want to get an opportunity to work with the lab.
And it's amazing what you see out there. I worked with one of your staff sergeants about a year and a half ago. I mean, doctorate,
yes,
everything. Yeah, just a bright, smart individual. So, I mean, it was great to see that there's opportunities for those individuals to make their way. And last but not least, I know you fill in for the boss a little bit on Capitol Hill. What's that relationship like? I know we've brought some staffs down on occasion.
Absolutely.
How much time do you spend with Congress?
Anytime they ask. As often as they ask. And again, rightly so, right? Yeah. Because they are trying to be good stewards of the taxpayers' money. And they want to make sure that what we're talking about is analytically supported, that we're doing something that makes sense. And so it's, again, over-communication from our perspective.
And this is a critical time right now as, they approve the budgets and work in conference to get what we need. I think I asked the commander a couple weeks ago, it's Christmas in July. What do you hope to see from Congress as this budget cycle wraps up?
I think we hope to see continued support. We have really seen support over the last several cycles, and that's probably especially noteworthy coming on the heels of COVID, right? As the pandemic, I mean, if you lay this out, if you lay force design out over time, the commandant arrives in July of 19 with the commandant's planning guidance.
Right, right.
We immediately get started on that,
right.
And then in fairly short order, there's a global shutdown for a pandemic,
right?
And that costs us 18 months to 2 years of really exceptional additional difficulty in communicating across the various organizations and stakeholders.
Right, right.
And so we really had to pick up the pace with communication as the COVID restrictions lifted, to be able to communicate, to show the analytic underpinning, to describe the whys that underpin force design, how the commandant initially arrived at the thinking behind the commandant's planning guidance, and the continued refinement of that over time as we've learned more, right? The campaign of learning that we learn more every day, and how that gets infused back into the cycle for the capabilities that we started this as a waypoint of 2030, force design 2030, but everything every day tells us that it would be better to be ready with that stuff sooner.
Yeah, and I think it's great. I mean, you mentioned on this, it's a living, breathing document that's constantly evolving based on the experimentation, the decisions that are made, the results that come out of these experimentations that you all do. So, I think we're in the middle of a generational change for the
Absolutely.
Marine Corps. And I think it's a generational change with the modernization that's being infused. Fast and furious in many ways, I think will hopefully get us to where we need to be. One of the things you mentioned, you talked about COVID in this period that we've lived in for so long. What were the impacts to the lab? I know we deal a lot with industry, and there's a lot of industry that are out there reeling, supply chain issues and things that we've had to. But has it had a major impact on what you all have done? And if so, have you found ways to overcome some of that?
It certainly had a major impact for the first year, 18 months. As the restrictions lifted, we recovered quickly. But you had many of the same things that I think most folks experienced, right? A greater reliance on teleworking,
right?
Distributed operations across the organization really put a damper on live force experimentation. So we refocused on wargaming during that time period, concept development.
Gotcha.
In order to make as much progress as we could in ways that we still could under pandemic conditions. And then as the situation evolved, as vaccines arrived, as restrictions were lifted, we were able to get back and reinforce the areas that, that it had to kind of take a knee during that time period.
Yeah, I know I've kept an eye on some of the things that the experimental battalions have been doing, but they've been going gangbusters and full on.
They have.
So I don't think there's been much slowing them down.
No, they, you know, the Marine Corps can't stop, right? I mean, even under the conditions of pandemic, had to adjust, but national defense can't stop.
That's true.
And so certainly the battalions that we were working with for the Infantry Battalion Experimentation Program all were doing fantastic work, leading kind of to the conclusion of phase one and discussions with the commandant on moving forward from there. And each of the battalions taught us things in different areas. So it was great to have a battalion from each division because they each approached the problems from a different perspective,
right?
And gave us really interesting and useful analysis to work with as we continue the design of the infantry battalion.
Yeah, I'm sure it's interesting, you know, different geographical obstacles, terrains, things of that sort.
And so different ways of using technology that we were able to inject for experimentation, right? You would be so impressed at the level of capability of that junior Marine who is essentially, you know, fighting the air war at 1,000 feet using different forms of ISR, different forms of loitering munitions, a great capability when you see those Marines in action.
I got to ask you, what's next for McQuill? I mean, it's a lot on your plate. What's next?
It is, and we'll keep doing what we've been tasked to do. You know, this is it's a great time to be at the lab. It's a great time to be doing something really consequential, and I know the members of the lab feel it. We are unique probably among the labs in the services because we are focused on warfighting as opposed to some labs and the other services spend a lot more time on basic sounds like the wrong word, but it really is the fundamentals of science,
right? Gotcha.
Scientific learning and technology,
right? Yeah.
Whereas we are focused on taking higher technology items and making a warfighting capability out of it. And as you look at the lab, we're about 25% uniform Marines, 25% civilian Marines, and about 50% contracted workforce.
Oh, okay.
So there's a constant evolution as we learn things and move in new directions. And I foresee that continuing. Force design is not complete.
Well, listen, I so very much look forward to seeing some of the outcomes and some of the things you're doing. Look, Scott, I truly appreciate the time you've made. It's been an outstanding conversation, and I know we've only scratched the surface. So I'm going to leave the door open. Maybe we can get you or somebody from your team to come back and talk to us at greater length on some of the things that are going on out there. So again, appreciate the time. I thank you so much for joining us. But before I let you go, there's something we do here. I got to ask you a couple of tough questions.
Okay.
So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Is our lightning round.
Right, the lightning round.
All right. Here we go. What's your favorite vacation spot?
Oh, favorite vacation spot. At this point, I'm going to say the Outer Banks.
Oh, outstanding. I've been going down there since the mid-80s, so I can relate. What's a TV show, book, movie, or a podcast you'd recommend?
So I'll recommend a book and I'll recommend a podcast in addition to yours.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Another fan.
So the book reading right now is called The End of the World is Just the Beginning by Peter Zion. And it looks at technology, geography, and demography to kind of forecast where things are going over the next 15, 20 years. Fascinating book. Just cracked it open recently. So that's worth reading. And a podcast I'd recommend is former Secretary Gertz has a podcast called Building the Base.
Wow.
And that is well worth listening to. A lot of interesting guests. And again, that nexus of government, industry, and technology.
Just what I needed is somebody to beat me out on the podcast. I'm sure it's a fascinating podcast. He's a great individual. So I'm going to have to look that one up. If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what would Scott Lacy be out there doing?
That is a good question. I have no idea.
All right, let me ask you my last tough question. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Oh, I think I would have to be to stop time at this point. Because every day, the day ends with about 16 things more to do.
That is so true. That is so true. I think I'm going to have to incorporate that one into my top two. Listen, Scott, once again, I truly appreciate the time you made. Keep doing what you're doing. I wish you the utmost success in all the endeavors that you and the team at the lab, because I know they're working extremely hard to see the vision of force design, the vision where the Marine Corps needs to go next. And so I thank you for what you do each and every day. And thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
I appreciate the opportunity. It was great to see you this morning. Thanks so much.
Well, this concludes another episode of Equipping the Corps. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation today. If so, please take a couple minutes, leave us a review, subscribe, tell your friends about us. Till next time, Manny Pacheco signing off.